Good morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group. I'm with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our monthly commodity reports, our daily metal reports, our blog, and our podcasts. We would also like to thank our good friend, Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at ektinteractive.com. And for a disclaimer, this podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, and market conditions, and is not intended to refer to any particular trading system. We are not responsible for any trading decisions taken by anyone not intended to listen. Information is not guaranteed to be accurate. We do try. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivative. Today is June 20th. Andy LeBeau, the market is falling out of bed right now. What's going on?
Well, just looking at this chart today, Jim, there's one word to describe this front month crude chart. I'm looking, July is expiring today, but the chart looks absolutely horrendous. We're down over $1.30 and we're making a new low for the year. I think it's 7 month lows, and the technical picture has completely eroded since the OPEC meeting in late May. We've gone straight down. And I think there are a number of reasons for what's happened to the WTI and to the Brent market. One, the news over the last two or three weeks, despite OPEC's rolling over the deal, has been uniformly bad. Let's start one with the inventory situation. I think in the last 2 weeks, according to the EIA, and there's another report, of course, out tomorrow, inventories rose by 22 million barrels, total inventories. And, the market is looking for draws now, and the 22 million barrel increase certainly was completely demoralizing to the WTI market and to the bulls. And I think they are beginning to slowly but surely throw in the towel here. And I think it's also gotten the bears, who may not be in this market, we may be seeing some new shorts into the market as we come down. The IEA, I thought, put out a lukewarm report during the last couple of weeks, indicating some bearishness for 2018, and we'll talk about that. U.S. production continues to grow, and we'll talk about that as well. But we're seeing U.S. production just continuing to grow. Not so much in June, but looking forward over the next couple of months, U.S. production is set to rise. I think an article today about drilled but uncompleted wells really got the market's attention. So it's really been one bad news item on top of another, and the market has reacted.
It was amazing to see us come out of that OPEC meeting and just sell off. I mean, the market, it was kind of expected a rollover, got the rollover, and yet still came out of that with weakness. And maybe that was an early tell of this market. But a quick comment on the IEA. 2018, they have non-OPEC production up 1.5 million. Is that's correct? Do you agree with that kind of That's a big number.
I think that's pretty aggressive, up 1.5 million. But you know, they're looking for, I think it was another 600 or 700 out of the U.S. That maybe more than that. Canada is set to grow next year as well, and they're looking for growth from Brazil. You know, the problem there is if it's true, then any growth in demand for next year, let's say demand grows 1.5, which would be a growth over this year, that means non-OPEC would take up all the increase in demand. And the big problem is, how is OPEC, which has just cut back by 1.2 million barrels a day, you know, how are they going to get back in? How are they going to get out of the deal? You know, how are they going to roll out of the deal? So I think that there's definitely pressure from the back of the curve, and people trying to look at, traders trying to look at what is 2018 looking like. And right now, at least from the IEA perspective, 2018 is looking very challenging for OPEC.
Right. So I guess from a trader standpoint, we were expecting to see this decline in stocks over the next quarter, say Q2 and Q3. And we thought maybe that would be, as we saw that unfold, it would be supportive to the market. But then you have this, you know, to me, a massive amount of supply coming online next year. I guess it's hard to buy it short term when you see that looming in the background.
You know, it's interesting, Jim. The market is showing that in the curve, because you look at D7, D8, which was backwardated in May, it's now $2 contango. So and looking like it could even go wider. So the curve, which we thought we might see go backward data, at least the back is looking really weak. The fronts aren't so bad. Both Brent and the U.S., the curve in the front at least is, you know, 20, 30 cents. So that's sort of holding in. But the market's telling us what it thinks about calendar 18 with these big contangos. And I think that's a reflection of expectation of growing non-OPEC production, and again, what happens when OPEC ends its deal, or, you know, we don't know. You know, we don't know if there's going to be a rollover or not, or whether or not they're going to. Maybe they need to. The market's telling them, and probably did tell them, right after the OPEC meeting, that it needed to do more, as you mentioned, Jim. That was a pretty good tell, but what was kind of strange, and we've seen this for other OPEC meetings, usually the market tells OPEC what it thinks before the meeting. And, you know, the market usually, if it thinks it needs more of a cutback, you know, it might sell off before the meeting. This market rallied going into the OPEC meeting. So I'm sure that, you know, the cartel thought, okay, you know, the market's with us.
So, Andy, let's stay with OPEC for just a moment here. The risk that they face, one you talked about was the U.S. response or the non-OPEC producer response. But what about non-compliance within their own group going to March 8, 2018? That's a long time to ask OPEC to comply.
Right. And you know, we certainly don't. I think it would be very damaging if they start pointing fingers and start increasing production. And certainly there's a political rift within OPEC with Qatar and the Saudis, although Qatar is a minor producer. The Saudis look like they're going to cut back production further over the summer, which they would do anyway because of the direct crude burn or cut back exports. So that may be helpful for the market. You know, the other thing that's hurting OPEC is that there's higher production out of both Libya and Nigeria, who aren't bound by the deal. Nigerian production looks set to grow by 200,000 or 300,000 a day since they lasted since the last OPEC meeting, and Libya's production is said to be up at 850. Libya says that it wants to get up to 1.1 or 1.2 by the end of the year. I'm not sure they have the capability to do that. And of course, both those producers are unreliable, to say the least. But nevertheless, the increase in production from both Nigeria and Libya is weighing on price. And of course, those are both sweet crude producers, which means that the surplus is world markets is squarely in on the sweet crude side, which of course are the two contracts that we trade, Brent and WTI.
Yeah, and I saw the U.S. actually exported, I think this year we had 4 weeks where we exported over a million barrels a day. Does that sound right?
I think there were four different weeks.
Yeah, four different weeks. Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
And then we don't talk about Venezuela. You know, are they imploding? Are they maintaining? Is it a slow decline? What do you see for their outlook as it feeds into this OPEC production number?
Well, I think the are they imploding? Yeah, well, they've been imploding for years, but they have been able to still produce and still export. They're at around 2.0 million barrels a day of production. I think next year they're set to fall, maybe another 100,000. So it's a slow decline, and obviously the market will keep an eye on the political situation in Venezuela. Somehow Maduro has been able to maintain power there, but that could slip into chaos at any moment. But you're right, Jim. Venezuela has not really been all that much in the at least on the crude side in the headlines of late.
And one other risk to OPEC cohesion is demand. The EIA seems to be the most bullish on demand. They've got up 1.5 million this year, up 1.6 next year. I think the other two, the OPEC and the IEA, might be a little lower. But 2018 would be 100 million barrels a year. What numbers are you using?
I think the 17 numbers, I think 1.3 is probably right for growth over next year, maybe 1.4. Some will depend on the U.S. gasoline market this summer, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, because gasoline was yet another really bad news item over the last couple of weeks. India seems to be gaining some momentum on demand. They had some real problems on the demonetization issues, so that they seem to be gaining some momentum. And China is probably going to be steady, maybe a touch lower, but I think they'll still come in at a growth of 0.35 to 0.4. And the global economies, we look to be in okay shape. I think the World Bank just raised its estimates for global GDP growth. So I think global economy looks okay.
Yeah, I saw those upgrades in their estimates. I think some of them are like 3.5% growth, which is pretty good. So what's Saudi policy to do, Andy? They want a high price for their budget and for their IPO coming up. But when they do that, their market share is seriously in jeopardy. So they need to keep a low price to keep the competition at bay. And then also there's this other part of clean tech coming on strong. It's a small part, but it is growing rapidly. Market share in the overall energy space is at risk as well. So, what do you tell them? What do you tell them they need to do? Or where do you see Saudi policy going forward?
I think they're going to keep trying to follow the path that they're on. It hasn't worked so far, but Al-Fali has said that he's not watching the daily ups and downs, but I'm sure that this down, you know, the last week or two may be something that they are watching. He seems pretty certain that the market is going to be, is going to rebalance later in the year, and it should begin to rebalance, but it's just taking longer. It's just taking so long, and the market grew more and more impatient with the rebalance efforts. But I think Saudi just for now is going to stay the course. They'll probably reduce exports this summer, and have faith in their numbers. You know, longer term, they're clearly know that they need to diversify away from oil, and I think that's a big part of their plan. Of their longer term plan that Prince bin Salman has been working on, and diversify into natural gas and probably into renewables as well. But I think they also believe that later this decade, in 2019, 2020, the market is going to be short because of at least short on crude, and I mean there's going to be a deficit based on the lack of capital expenditures, the low capital expenditure or the declining capital expenditures from 2014, 15, and 16. So you know, I think they look out a few more years, and they probably see that they're going to have a market that is going to be better than where it is right now.
I think that's a good point, because we are we're hearing so much bearish news. I mean, it seems to the price movement seems to bring out the story. So if we start selling off, then all you hear and read about are the bearish stories, and I think there's this argument that the capital spending on new projects is way down, and a couple years out, we might actually have a little we might be short a little bit of crude, and that would be the commodity cycle that we've seen time and time again.
We could be short a lot, actually.
We could be short a lot, right?
So we'll see. That's further out. Right now, they have to get through the next 9 months.
Right. Let's move over to gasoline for a second, Andy. I was just looking at the EIA report, and they show from April 28th to May 26th. We 5-year average, we see a decline of 1.7 million barrels in PADD 1B. In this year, it was only a decline of 0.3. So kind of comment on that and talk about gasoline and what's going on there, please.
Well, gasoline, what a disappointment, at least for the last 2 weeks on demand, which was so much way off trend, and we were looking for gasoline demand to be really strong this summer, and so at least for these 2 weeks it hasn't, and stocks built for 2 weeks in a row. Last week just a dagger with that gasoline build. Now, having said that, I still think that this driving season could be really robust. Pump prices are probably going to end up being below last year. Right now, the all grades average is around 250, and that includes the California high numbers. But regular gasoline is probably, you know, like national average is probably in the 230s, which is pretty good. Highway miles driven this summer should be way up over last year, or at least up over last year. And with lower pump prices and people planning to take driving vacations, I think we're going to see a pretty good driving season. These last 2 weeks are kind of puzzling. It could be, as some people have speculated, what's happening is the wholesalers are keeping are not moving. They're not moving products out as quickly, waiting for prices to turn and move up, and that could be an issue on these two weeks. But I think going forward we'll see a pretty big. I think we'll see some nice figures. The problem is, as we mentioned in our last podcast, is that runs are so high. You know, it's still 17.2, 17.3. Those are numbers we did not forecast at the beginning of the year, which means gasoline production is still going to be on the higher end. And we may not see the types of draws that we really need to get gasoline into a big-time bull market unless refiners start moving out for gasoline into diesel. But it's way too early for that. They're still running for gasoline and will continue to do so. So gasoline is in a very, very precarious situation here. We're going to need high demand, and I think we'll get it. In the U.S., we're going to need high exports. We may get it. Mexico just had a big refinery problem. So we may still get the high exports, but production may really keep gasoline from really drawing what we need, and that could be tough.
And what about distillate? Seems to be in a little better shape. The five-year average in the same period, April 28th to May 26th, we typically see a build, and we actually saw a draw. And why don't you talk about distillate?
Diesel, yeah, distillates, I think, is in better shape. We saw the crack. The diesel crack really fall apart, and the gasoline crack both also fell apart over the last few weeks. They both have since rallied pretty nicely. Diesel demand, again, if the economy is as strong as what, or relatively strong, I don't know, 3.4 is all that strong, but nevertheless, diesel is the product that should benefit the most from a stronger economy. Diesel exports have just been rip-roaring, and I think that's going to continue to – I think we're going to continue to see that. So to me, diesel looks like it's in much better shape. Given the last EIA report, we're around last year's levels. We're still around 20 over the four-year average. So that's not great, but I think there's some hope for diesel.
So do you want to say, tell me what you always say when somebody wants to lean in and buy a distillate, sell gasoline?
There's probably a million other trades that you should be doing other than the heat to gas trade, which is affectionately known as the Widowmaker.
I think that was the original Widowmaker.
It was the original Widowmaker. I think that the heat to gas trades is one that any speculator should avoid at all costs.
I think the March April natural gas is the other one.
The other one, and I'm thinking that because even though diesel may look like in better shape, you know, you could have a big hurricane come in and the next thing you know, all the refinery capacity's out. You could have refinery issues, and there you are, long heat, short gas, and you're dead. You're just dead. So it's not a trade that I think either one of us would really recommend.
Right. And that's you bring up hurricanes. I think we used to look at hurricanes as taking out oil production, and then we realized they also take out refinery. So you take out supply, you take out demand. And then with the natural gas, it used to be very, very bullish for natural gas, but now a lot of natural gas is being produced everywhere, particularly in Marcellus.
Right.
So the trades evolve as we move on. Let's move to price outlook. I mean, we talked about prices, but we were looking at, I think, a 45-55 range and in previous podcasts, I tried to squeeze a bullish number out of you and saying, could we get to 60 by the end of the year? And grudgingly says, yeah, you could get to 60. And now we have broken to the downside of this range. Going forward, are those still good numbers, or would you obviously we're outside the 45 has been violated, but what do you think going forward?
Well, Jim, what happens when the technicals look bad, all the news is bad, everyone's trying to get short the market?
Rallies.
Rallies. Yeah. So I'm not saying this is the bottom, but it certainly is. It certainly wouldn't surprise me to see the market rally out of here. It needs to stabilize, and I think the thing that it needs is at least we've got to start seeing all the EIA numbers. We have to start seeing stocks begin to at least draw, not build 22 million. Maybe even unchanged would help. But, right. We have to start seeing some evidence that we're going to see a stock draw. And I think we will. It probably isn't going to be quite as much as OPEC had hoped for. But I think that stocks are going to draw over the next 9 months, and we're not going to get to the 5-year average that they want. That's not going to happen. The 5-year average of OECD inventories at the end of March is like 2.8 billion. We're not getting there. I think we're going to get to like 2.95, which would still be 100 million draw. It's something.
I think one of the ways I've been looking at this, and it's hasn't worked out, but is from a day supply situation. If you just stay balanced and you get a million and a half increase in demand this year, a million and a half next year, or something around there, now all of a sudden you've got the same inventory supporting higher demand numbers. So that, you know, in kind of a stealth way, tightens the market. So if you do get some progress in drawing and these demand numbers increasing, you know, it may at least keep the market from falling apart on the downside and maybe get it back into that 45, 55 range.
Right. And that wouldn't surprise me at all. Could it break 40? I mean, the technicals look so bad that you could see some follow-through selling in here. But we need a little bit of good news to help the market as well. You know, I forgot I mentioned it, but that duck story that was on Bloomberg today was also not encouraging, saying that drilled but uncompleted wells are at a 3-year high, and that could still encourage rather than drilling new wells, you might start seeing well completion. So U.S. production still could be on the increase. I think one good thing about these lower prices is that we're probably not going to see all that much hedging activity in the back of the curve by way of producers. So, you know, maybe that's something. I think the Cal 2018 is 44.80 or $45. I don't think that's going to draw all that much hedging activity, so that could be plus. That could be a plus. Similarly, the Balmo for the balance of the year is 43.80, 44, and it looks like producers are still under hedged. So they need to get these hedges on, and it's not going to be down at these low prices. So maybe U.S. production won't grow that much. But again, on the alternative are these drilled but uncompleted wells.
Interesting. And what are the implications for the structure? I guess we've already seen a move in D-17, D-18. You think that's got more to go, or
maybe the chart doesn't look particularly good on any of those but I do think crude stocks, given that runs are so high, I do think we'll get under 500 million and maybe down to 485, 490 on crude stocks. So maybe that over the next couple of months, so maybe that will arrest some of these declines in the on the D's red D's. To get backwardated, I don't see that going backwardated right now. But again, it was backwardated just at the end of May.
Right. It does change. Markets fluctuate. Prices change. What about? Let me put it this way: out of the three, gasoline, diesel, crude oil, what do you think is the best performer and the least performer? I'm not asking you absolute price. I'm just asking you relative value. What do you think is going forward is going to look good relative to the other two?
Yeah, I think that crude will probably, since I do think that the crude stocks are going to draw quicker than either of the product stocks, I think crude is going to look the best. Diesel, I think, could look okay. And gasoline, as we said, it's in a very precarious state right now. But if demand picks up and we can just get a little decline on the output, which could be a refinery issue, margins unfortunately haven't completely collapsed yet. So, you know, that's an issue too. But I probably rank gasoline as third, but with a possible bullet to the upside.
Excellent. Okay, Andy, that's great. Let's wrap it up there. This is Jim Colburn. Check us out at commoditysearchgroup.com.